Hi, this is Krishna Dev, BizGrowthNews.com, and I'm just here at the Irish Computer Society conference all about data protection, which is taking place in February of 2011 in Dublin. You'll find the ICS online at ics.ie. You'll also find them on Twitter at IrishCompSoc. I'm delighted to have the opportunity in a break to catch up with Hugh Jones, who's one of the specialists in data protection, doing the training for people who come to the Irish Computer Society for those programs. Now, there's been a very comprehensive program put together today for the conference, everything from the Data Protection Commissioner being here through to case studies from a number of different organizations, including ANPOST and BT, for example, and also a number of legal experts. Now, the context of me having the conversation here with Hugh is to bring us some ideas and tips about what we can do. This is not a legal perspective that we're going to look at, so you may want to go and talk to your legal advisors around specifics. But delighted that we can catch up here, Hugh, and maybe you can start off by telling us, particularly in terms of that interesting piece of research that's been done recently by the ICS and some of the, I guess you could say, disturbing facts about our awareness on data protection here in Ireland.
Thanks, Krishna. Yeah, I'd say disappointing more than disturbing would be our primary view of it. This is the third annual Data Protection Conference, and each year we've prepared a survey prior to the conference to try and get the lie of the land. The survey predominantly looks at issues like awareness, like the experience of data protection, and particularly, obviously, the experience of data fraud or identity theft and things like that. In the same week that the UK government brought out studies that showed that the identity theft industry is worth £27 billion sterling a year, we were very surprised by the level of statistics coming back from the Irish respondents, who felt that less than 20% had personally experienced identity theft. Now, this, I suppose, prolongs the misnomer in Irish business circles that data protection is something that somebody else needs to worry about, and certainly that identity fraud is something that happens to somebody else. There was also a disappointing statistic in terms of the relatively low level of awareness that organisations had, or particularly that staff felt their organisations had in relation to data protection awareness. As high as 68% felt their organisations weren't doing enough to raise awareness or to make the staff aware of what their obligations were in relation to the data. So, you know, we take some sustenance from that there's more to do. There's plenty of work out there. We've had a very good turnout today at the conference, over 160 companies represented. So we take some consolation from that. But certainly the work is there for us to do in terms of raising further awareness in the industry, making people aware of it. A lot of the focus for the agenda today, and we have some very highly placed experts in the whole industry. As you mentioned, we have the legal experts. We certainly have the business and technology experts, people from BT who are absolutely industry leaders in terms of the research and development of new technology and new solutions. The trends we're recognising, obviously, it goes without saying, social networking is a massive trend. People's use of and provision of their personal data to the internet, to Facebook, Bebo, and all the other providers. The cloud computing topic is massive because organizations are obviously very attracted by the benefits and by the financial savings to be enjoyed by availing of cloud services, but are more and more becoming aware that no matter what service they engage, no matter what provider they engage, they never lose their obligation or their responsibility as data controller. And that creates a bit of a dilemma for them. To fully avail of the technology and fully avail of the cloud solutions, they are necessarily putting their data on a global infrastructure, on a global platform that flies in the face of the data protection legislation, which says you must keep the data within the European jurisdiction. So there's quite a dilemma there for organisations, and we try to work with them closely to provide them with good practical advice as to how to do it. We had colleagues here today from some of the top legal companies providing very useful tips, and those slides will be available on the ICS website for reference.
Now, just let's take that as a subject, because 97% of the businesses here in Ireland are small and medium enterprises. Mm. Many of them are using tools, and let's unbundle cloud computing to be things like many people have got accounts with Google for their Gmail.
Yep.
Many people might be using software as a service, for example, with Salesforce for customer relationship management or Microsoft Dynamics, and that's not things that they're hosting themselves. Other people are using tools like Evernote to bookmark research and information.
Yes.
Some of us are perhaps using other third-party providers for our email. They are all in the cloud. So if that's the case, and of course what we heard from somebody like BT, where they're looking at building their own cloud within their organization, they're the exception. I think even in Irish context, they would be the exception. Not, I can't even imagine many large organizations in Ireland looking to do that either.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at the rest of us who are perhaps are using those services. What would you be advising people to consider? Two or three things if they're looking to use, as I'm sure most people are using those services already.
Yes. No, it's a very valid point. And as individuals, we're making use of Gmail accounts. We're making use of, we're sharing our CVs. We're sharing our personal data. We're putting photographs and very personal information up on social networking sites. So absolutely, I think we're already doing it. What we're maybe not considering is the categorization or classification of the data that we're making available. So if you take it maybe specifically from the point of view of organizations who are considering availing of these cloud solutions, I'd say three tips that I would suggest in the first instance, all fairly accessible, all fairly manageable. The first one is to assess the provider and see what you're being offered. And does it in any way undermine your obligations as a data controller? Because that's the priority and that's the primary step. You have a duty of care for your data as the data controller that you cannot contract away. You cannot outsource. You can outsource a service. You can outsource the infrastructure, the software, etc. You cannot outsource your obligations as a controller. So that's the primary thing. Understand what the service provider is offering you. The second thing is to understand your data. Understand how your data is categorized, bearing in mind that the data protection legislation only relates to personal data, data through which individuals are personally identifiable. So, for example, purely commercial information, technology information, while it might be intellectual property of your organization, does not come within the remit of the data protection legislation. But then within personal data, you have ordinary, in inverted commas, ordinary personal data or sensitive personal data, specific categories of data such as data in relation to political observations, in relation to religious or ideological beliefs, racial or ethnic information, information about mental or physical health. If that's the kind of data you're proposing to share or to put on the cloud, then obviously you have extra obligations and additional obligations within the legislation regarding that data. The third tip we would always say on courses is, your biggest ambassadors could be your biggest assassins, your staff. The people who work within the organization are your primary point of interface. They're your primary processors of your data. How aware are they about that obligation? How aware are they of the legislation, of the 8 rules that exist within the data protection legislation? Are they aware of their obligations? Are they aware of the parameters, the limits of what they can and cannot do with the data, of the specific reasons and purposes that the data is there? And the third thing, I suppose, in all humility, I would suggest is that organisations seek training. You mentioned, and I'll take every opportunity to promote, I hope you'll forgive me for doing it, every opportunity to promote the Irish Computer Society as a training provider. And that's, as you mentioned in the introduction, my primary role with the ICS is as a tutor and mentor for organisations. So we'd strongly encourage organisations to check out our website, ics.ie, and to have a look at the variety of courses we provide, from very formal 3-day certification courses right down to on-site bespoke courses that we can offer to a sector-specific industry, where we can tweak and modify the training to be very specific to their particular needs or maybe to cover the topics that they have a particular interest in. So there are just 3 tips that we would suggest.
Now, one of the things that was also covered today was about upcoming changes in data protection legislation. What do we need to be aware about in terms of that area?
Yeah, Mr. Billy Hawkes, the Data Protection Commissioner, very kindly opened the conference this morning. And he always takes opportunities to raise people's awareness about upcoming changes in the legislation. Some of the listeners will be aware that as recently as 2009, 2010, we introduced a code of practice in Ireland about notifying both the commissioner and the data subjects of any breach or leakage of personal data. Now, while that is still a code of practice, it's not yet legislation because it's waiting for the election, obviously, and for the new government to be formed. But it's one of the pipeline pieces of legislation on its way, with every indication that that will be introduced into law during 2011. There's also a move to modify the legislation, bearing in mind that the most recent data protection in Ireland, data protection legislation, was drafted and introduced in 1995 and became law in Ireland 8 years later in 2003. So that's in dire need of a revamp, of an upgrade. There's every indication that new legislation will be drafted and provided in 2011, as soon as May 2011, to be introduced as a proposal. And traditionally, the European legislators would offer between 3 and 4 years for member states of the European Union to introduce that into their book of law. So already this morning, Mr. Hawke suggested that the draft legislation will be available by the end of 2011, possibly as soon as November, with the likelihood that the legislation would need to be in place by mid-2015. So we're talking about a 4-year cycle to assess, evaluate and introduce that legislation into the Irish Book of Legislation. So quite a lot to do, some interesting developments coming up. And you'd expect that legislation to look at and take account of things that have developed since 1995. So the whole area of biometrics, of DNA, iris scanning, full body scanners at airports, the whole technology industry that has advanced since 9/11 and in world security issues. We'd look at the whole industry of social networking. You know, how we use and how we share information on the web. You've already mentioned the cloud, and certainly I'd expect that to be a massive element of this new legislation. But for all that change, it'll still come back to the core 8 principles, that data processing should be fair, the data should be kept accurate, the data integrity should be sustained, the data should be kept secure, and ultimately that the data subject would have a right of access to that data, and that would be respected and honoured by the data controllers. So quite interesting times as a tutor, obviously, and as a specialist in the area. I'm very much looking forward to seeing the drafts of that legislation and to watching and, if at all possible, to helping it on its way to becoming law in Ireland.
The world has changed a lot since 1995. And just as we're wrapping up here, a couple of final thoughts from you on a subject which I hope we won't hear about too many times, but you often hear about computers being stolen or laptops being stolen, or I guess today it could be the iPads or even, you know, other smaller netbooks or whatever, being taken out of cars, briefcases, when you're standing, you know, leaving it in a taxi, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And let's hope that we don't do that. Give us a couple of top tips about what we should be doing to make sure that our content on our, you know, mobile devices that we're using in whichever shape or form are encrypted in a way that people, you know, we're not going to be breaching data protection just by an unfortunate thing that none of us want our laptops or iPads to go missing. But, you know, I'm sure it happens every single day.
Every hour of every day. Thanks, Krishna. It's a very valid topic. And a lot of the headlines recently have touched on that and have been about those kind of issues. I suppose the miracle and the benefit of technology is that we can now store information on devices, you know, that fit in our pockets, fit in our briefcases and whatever, that in the past would have taken an entire room and coolant and radiators and the whole lot to accommodate and to store. So we're walking around with massive amounts of data. First question is, do we actually need to be doing that? Do we need the data hard copied on our devices? Can we not get to where we need to go and then download it, availing of the very technology we talked about earlier, the cloud and the infrastructure and the integrated systems that are available? Second thing is, what processes are in place and what procedures are in place to prevent data walking out of the building? Do we have encrypted sticks, memory sticks? Do we use encryption on our laptops? Just recently as last week, we've had 12 laptops stolen from a semi-state organisation. And the first thing they were able to say and give reassurance on was that every one of the devices had military-grade encryption. So that's a massive reassurance to anybody whose data would have been on, and because of the nature of the organization, pretty much everybody in the country over a certain age would have been on those laptops, or their data would have been. So there's huge reassurance to be offered if you can say confidently those systems are encrypted. And then it becomes a crime of theft rather than a crime of anything more sinister, such as data theft or fraud or a harvesting of personal data, etc. So, number one, why do we need to have the data on there in the first place? Number two, what are our processes, and are our staff, our colleagues aware of those? Third one, what penalties exist to ensure that they adhere to those processes and to those policies? I've worked with a financial organization recently, and their step, their very practical step in this, recognizing all the technology that was available, was they disabled all the USB ports on their systems and introduced a policy so that where staff did have laptops for doing the legitimate work of the organization, they were highly encrypted, and certain procedures, so the laptop had to be secure, it had to be locked down where it was in use in an office, etc. But we're human beings. We will leave our laptops, we will lose our mobile phones. You saw Wayne Rooney just last week, his wife lost a camera that had very personal digital photographs of of their child on the photographs. That's subject to a legal case now for blackmail. The technology makes it possible to carry huge amounts of data. As humans, we're only playing catch-up. So there are some very practical tips in terms of having a security code on our PCs, having a security code on our handsets, on our PDAs, or on our iPads, on our mobile phones. One interesting statistic is that the taxi service in Ireland can reunite 92% of owners with their software or hardware devices for the simple reason that people don't put the passwords on. So the taxi drivers only have to open it, hit home, and they get the mobile phone number, they get the house number, they get the address of the person who has lost the phone. On one hand, it's great, they can reunite them with their pieces of equipment. On the other hand, it's a damning indictment of us that we don't put personal PIN numbers or security numbers. The security is there, the facilities are there. We just don't make use of them. And it's all about being pragmatic. Do we actually need to do what we're doing? Do we need to bring that laptop? Do we need to carry around CDs with 20,000 personal records on them when the technology is available not to do that? Do we actually need it on a USB stick?
Well, thank you for some very, very practical tips. I guess a bit of a wake-up call for maybe many of us. The room was packed full of people there scribbling lots of notes, and yeah. I think it's been very beneficial.
Good.
But I would just definitely suggest come on over to the Irish Computer Society website at ics.ie. And remember, you can follow them on Twitter at IrishCompSoc. Check out the programmes, and particularly the training and education that's going on in this area. I don't want to scare us all, but I think, if I remember rightly, the fine for a breach in data protection in euro terms is 100,000 or up to that amount, and let alone reputation issues.
Absolutely. I was just going to say the reputational issue alone should cause organisations to sit up and take notice. You're quite right. If it's unsolicited email or texting, it can be as high as 250,000 or 10% of turnover. So it's quite a penalty to look at. The penalties in the UK are up to 500,000. Thankfully, so far, for most organisations, there's no prison sentence yet involved in the legislation. But as you say, there's new legislation coming out, and there's every indication that those fines and penalties will get more stringent.
So
we've got to look forward to.
Let alone the headaches, the stress, but as we said there, the reputation of your organisation is at risk. So an area we all need to be aware of, I think.
Absolutely. When we deliver the training, we talk about three aspects of data protection. There's the personal, the obvious personal issue of your own personal data and how it's been looked after, how it's been kept secure, who has it, who it's been shared with. There's the professional, how you do the job you do. How you maintain the accuracy, the integrity, the comprehensiveness of the data, and how you use it to best effect in your organisation. But the third one you've touched on, which is the commercial, your commercial presence in the market, your credibility as an organisation, the trust that your customers and that your clients have in you, all of that impinges on the brand, your logo, that you work so hard to establish your place in the market. only to have it undermined by inadvertent leakage, unsolicited use of the data, unlawful use of the data, that will draw attention from the commissioner and will draw attention from maybe your competitors in the industry. So all to be avoided, all to be discovered when you come to our training, and we look forward to working with anybody who has questions in this area.
Well, thank you so much, Hugh, for a very informative conversation. You can contact Hugh Jones via the ICS at ics.ie. And this is Krishna Day of bizgrowthnews.com, and I hope you found it helpful in terms of practical tips that we can use. I think this is highly relevant. It doesn't matter what size your organisation is here in Ireland. We all need to be aware of this. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Krishna.